system were, because we both come from the great state of New York. And I had an opportunity to hear her husband speak a couple years ago, but Bernadette wasn't there to defend herself, so. I'm looking forward to hearing your story, Bernadette. She is a charming lady with over 30 years of Al-Anon, and I hope you'll help me welcome her to our conference.
Morning.
Good morning.
Happy summer. Today's the first day of summer. My name is Bernadette, and I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family group.
Hi, Bernadette.
It's really a privilege to be invited. I've worked on silence for so many years. When my husband tells me to speak up, it's amazing. Can I? With the mic. That's good. Okay. I've lost my train of thought now. But I have a joke. I start with a joke. I must. It's the only joke I have. It's a sick joke, but that's all right. I'm going to tell it anyway. This woman goes to a psychiatrist and says, I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. And the psychiatrist says, I know what your problem is. You're too tense. Oh, they got it, they got it. I really want to thank the committee for inviting my husband Bill and I to talk here. It's really, really a privilege. I want to thank the committee for all the hospitality, for our little goodie bags, for just being so wonderful, you know. And this is such a warm group, I feel like I'm home, but that's how I felt when I first came to Al-Anon. I was home. And when John spoke, I want to thank John. Where's John? It's John. John. I want to thank John so much for last night. I got so much from his talk. And when he talked about trust, boy, did I understand what he was talking about. I'm here to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I want to tell you a little bit about what I was like before I came into Al-Anon and what my life was like. I was born, I was the youngest of 16 children in an Italian Catholic family. it was a very happy family, you know, I thought so. My mother was wonderful. She was a very spiritual, religious woman. My father died when I was 8 years old, and it wasn't until our youngest daughter and Bill and I went to buy her a guitar, and they were talking, and they were really talking about a lot of father things. And, you know, I became very resentful, and I realized then how much I missed by not having a father to grow up with. But my mother was, as I say, she was wonderful. She was a moving force in my life. I was very sick when I was a young child. I had rheumatic fever, and there were a lot of things I couldn't do. Couldn't ride bikes, couldn't do a lot of things. Spent a lot of time in bed. Of course, before I came into Al-Anon, I wanted to spend a lot of time into bed, but I had so many things to do, I couldn't. I wanted to sleep a lot. Anyway, I grew up and became a teenager, and was sort of happy through that. I was thinking of becoming a nun, and at 13 I went to a junior 8, and that was a school where it was a day school. But I found out by the time I was 17 I liked boys too much and decided not to stay with that. And I didn't like praying on my knees so much either. So I went to a regular high school and graduated and dated and had a good time. And our family, it was fun growing up in a large family, being the baby. I was spoiled a lot. I got a bicycle when I could ride one. But I remember we were always busy. My mother always taught me, you always did for people. You always sacrificed. You always gave of yourself. And every Sunday there was a family meal at our house. And I, being the youngest, I was always cooking. That didn't change much. You know, we're married, we have 9 children, you know, and boy, did I cook a lot. And But I enjoyed those holidays. I really did, and all those Sundays. I didn't know anything much about drinking, except that we had wine on Thursday nights with our spaghetti, and on Sunday, you know, we always had wine. And when company came, they took out anisette and gave them some drinks. But I had no idea that alcohol was a problem in the world. I was engaged to a young man. He went overseas, and when he came back, I decided to marry him. And I broke my engagement on a Wednesday, and that Saturday, my niece, who was very close in age to me, because since my sisters were so old, I had nieces that were close to my age, we went out. We sat for 3 hours in an ice cream parlor, trying to get enough nerve to go into the back of a bar where they had dancing. So we did. We went back there, and in walked this tall, dark, handsome guy. And he was a great dancer. And he chose me instead of my niece. And there he is, right there. And let me tell you now, this wasn't all. He worked for the New York Journal American, which was one of the largest evening newspapers in New York. And he had a powder blue convertible. It was beautiful. I was in love. I was in love. And 3.5 weeks later, we eloped to Elton, Maryland, and got married. Now, this was very unlike me. I was really a very obedient child, you know, and let me tell you, did I hurt my mother? And, you know, I made my amends to her, but, you know, to this day, it twists my heart whenever I think of how much I hurt her, you know, because she was such a good lady, and she didn't deserve that. But she forgave me. She forgave me, and she knows I didn't do it to hurt her. Sometimes I think fate takes a hand. I believe Bill and I were supposed to be married. Anyway, I had no idea that Bill was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. We drank. I drank. We went out and had a good time. I went and danced a lot. We danced our nights away. We went to the beach. We took rides. I saw him every day for that 3.5 weeks. And every day. I saw him every day or every night whenever he wasn't working. And this is unusual because my mother only allowed me to date on Wednesdays and Saturdays or Fridays or something or other. But she liked Bill also. And he's charming. He's still charming. He was charming. He's still charming. And, where was I? Okay, so we were at a party, I remember. We were at a christening. And you know, it was really strange. I did notice that whenever we went to parties or when I went out with him and we were with friends, God, everybody was falling down drunk. Everybody was drinking. And very quickly, I gave up all my friends. You know, his friends were exciting and they were the ones to be with, you know, and he really didn't want to be with my friends too much. We didn't drink much. We drank Coke and tea and once in a while a little bit of wine. So, we were at this christening party, and his mother refused to be introduced to me. She's a tough lady, tough lady. And his father was very nice. His father was a great man. But anyway, that night we left, and we left the party, and he said, let me take you home. And I said, I don't want to go home. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to stay with you. And he said, well, let's get married. I said, okay. And we stayed out all night, and you know, after I stayed out all night, I thought, I can't go home now. I mean, you know, you just don't do things like that. This is in 1955. So we did. We eloped. We went to Elton, Maryland, and we went to this Boyd's Motel, and just in January, after all these years, just before we were married, 42 years, we finally went back to Elton, Maryland, and went back to the place where we eloped. We went to the house to the judge that married us. It's no longer a judge's house. It's something else. We went to the courthouse, and we went to the Boyd's Motel. I saved everything, and we didn't stay there. It used to be a very nice hotel. Now it's a, you know, an hour daytime, you know, an hour daytime. But But everybody was charming, and they couldn't believe the postcard that I had and how beautiful a motel it was. It was really great. But so we got to the hotel, and Bill said he was going to go into town, and he a big spender. He was going to get something for us to eat. He got a pound of bologna, an 8-cent loaf of Wonder Bread, and a quart of Four Roses. And you know, it was really funny too. It didn't take much to get me very drunk, and he gave me a couple of drinks, and I was crying. I cry a lot when I drink, and and he said to me, "What would you do if we could never have children?" And oh, this devastated me. The thought of never having children. Now we have 9. I mean, you know. I would go to my mother and say to her every time I would get pregnant, "Oh, Mom, you know, I don't know how we're going to afford this new baby that's coming, you know." And she said, "Don't worry, God will provide." And then I went to one of my sisters and asked her, you know, "How do you control having babies?" I don't know why I asked her. She had 6 array. So after we came back from Elton, Maryland, Bill's mother screamed and yelled a lot, and my mother looked at me and kept saying, "Why? Why?" I would have rather she slapped me in the face and beat me up, but just why? But she was a very kind lady, and she took us over to Bill's mother's and said she was going to give us a wedding, and we were going to get married in church, and would she come? And Bill's mother said, "No, I won't come." And she said, "I'm too busy." And she said, "Well, they'll wait until you're ready." And my brother Anthony, who Bill got very friendly with, he came with my mother. And strangely enough, the night before we eloped, we were out with my brother and his wife and 2 cousins of Bill's. And we were at a strip joint, as a matter of fact. It was a restaurant. It was a Chinese restaurant, and they had strippers. Bill took me back later when I was pregnant once, and they had strippers. We had dinner, and they had strippers, and they were male. They were when they finished, they were male, and my whole dinner came up. I'll never forget that. But you know, when Bill and I first got married, I mean, he was my hero. He was my knight in shining armor. He was going to take care of me. I wanted a partner, you know. It says in the One Day at a Time book which I love, really it's my Bible, in Al-Anon, and it says that it's we marry someone, it's a child calling to child, and I didn't want to take care of him. I wasn't looking to take care of him. I was looking for this big, strong, strapping man to take care of me, you know. But we got married, and we went out with a lot of people, but I noticed all the people we went out with were drinkers, you know. I remember this one guy, I can't remember what his name was, but I remember we picked him and his girlfriend up one night. They literally carried him to the car, carried him into the place he was going. He drank, carried him out, and carried him home, you know. And this was, I figured it was normal. He was just having a good time, you know. The reason I never knew that Bill drank a lot is because I never saw him drink a lot. You see, I would drink as much as him when we were out. I wasn't aware that he was drinking before he met me and once he dropped me off. When we got married, Bill was working a night job. I was working a day job. I never saw him, really. How I ever got pregnant, I shall never know. Well, yes, I know, really. We lived in this little apartment. It wasn't anything, it wasn't great shape, but it didn't matter. I was with my hero. You know, I didn't care where I was. It was small, and it wasn't much. And I remember, the bed had a spring sticking up in the middle of the mattress. I'll never forget that. But you know, I love that little place. It was a wonderful place because I was with Bill. At one point in time, my mother tried to tell me that Bill was drinking a lot and going out during the day and gambling, and I threw her out of my house and told her that if she couldn't say anything nice about him, I didn't want her to talk about him at all. And she never did. She never said a word to me anymore about him. One time when his drinking got real bad and I went to him and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. He's really, I think he's drinking a lot. And I think something's happening. And she said, well, you can't leave him now. He's very sick. You know, then when he started to sober up in the program, and I went to her and I said, oh, God, this isn't so swift either, you know. And she said to me, John was saying last night, you know, he was perfect. And I thought Bill was perfect. I really did. I thought everything about him was perfect. And I knew he was smarter than me. He went to college. You know, I'm lucky I got out of high school. So when I said to her, I don't know how I can live with him now, and she said, oh, you can't leave him now. Somebody else will get all the good stuff. You couldn't win with her. You know, you just couldn't win. Actually, you could win. So Bill and I got married, and we went out with people, and we would, you know, and have a good time, and go to a lot of different places, and we never got drunk together. We never did get drunk together, because I never knew we got drunk. Well, I never knew that he was always sobering up when he came home. I didn't know he was drunk then trying to get sober. But then I got pregnant. Let me go back a minute. We got married in March, and he had to work, so we didn't take a honeymoon until May. And I wanted to go to the Poconos Mountains, which is only in Pennsylvania. And he wanted to go to Maine and New Hampshire. And do you know, we spent most of that honeymoon looking for, a lot of the states were dry at that time. So we spent a lot of time riding around looking for a place for him to find something to drink. I should have known at that time that something was wrong, but you know. We came home from this honeymoon, and soon after that I got pregnant, and once I had my baby, I couldn't go out with him anymore. And he wasn't coming home too much anymore. And he would call and tell me he was working late, and he had to work late, and I believed him, because since he was a reporter, you know, he had the weird hours. So we had our first child, Judy, and she was premature, and she was in the hospital 5 weeks. And I often told her I owe her five weeks, because I didn't have her for those 5 weeks. But that was a hard time. Now it's great. They let you go in, let the father go in. At that time, they didn't let the father go. They didn't let me see my baby for days, you know, and I was sure something was wrong. And I didn't realize what an insecure person I was, and I was afraid to tell anybody I was insecure. I wanted everybody to think I was really cool. I knew what was going on, you know, and everything was all right. Everything that happened was okay. I never, in all the drinking time, except when I spoke to my mother about his drinking, never talked to my family about Bill's drinking. And you know, I'm glad I never did. Never talked to my friends about it either. And I'm glad I didn't, because they never would have forgotten. They never would have forgotten. And God has been very good to me. Sometimes I have to really think hard about the things, and sometimes things got really bad. But God has given me the grace to let me forget a lot of things, or let them dim a lot, you know. Actually, I think sometimes things have happened in sobriety that I'm more resentful for than things that happened when he was drinking, because I thought, well, he was drinking then, you know, that was an excuse. But now he's sober. What's going on now? So we began to have children rather rapidly, and Bill says we had them because I wanted to give him responsibility. Not true. I was a Catholic, and you know about that stuff. So anyway. I never thought about it. I loved having children. I think that I was the closest to God when I had these babies. I loved it. I loved being a mother and wheeling my babies around and feeding them and taking care of them. So you didn't get any sleep. Well, that didn't matter. You know, I was young. I could handle that. But more and more, he stayed out. He stayed out, and he would stay out. And I was sure it was me. It had to be me. I was either, first of all, I was Italian. You know, and his mother had told him not to marry an Italian person. I don't know why, but anyway, I was too short. You know, maybe I didn't cook good enough. You know, maybe I didn't clean good enough. Maybe I wasn't bright enough. I didn't feel very bright. I don't know, but I blame myself. And he never told me it was my fault. He never did. I just thought that it was my fault. I took all this blame on myself. And so then we had Charlotte about 18 months later, and 14 months later we had Billy. And we lived in a two-family house. From this furnished apartment, we moved into a two-family house, and then we moved into a one-family house. And it was at this time my son Billy, who was very ill. He was very sick. And this was towards the end of Bill's drinking. This was in 58, 59. No, it wasn't towards the end. It was sort of in the middle of where we were. And but this young boy was, this baby was very sick all the time. He had a lot of rashes and a lot of allergies. And there was no money. I didn't know where all the money was going. And I came to hate this little child. I came to hate him. I picked on him. Took things out on him. I hit my little girls. I took out on the children what I couldn't take out on the adults in my life. I'm not proud of that, but I say it in case anybody else has ever gone through that, you know, because we are so sick. We get so sick from this disease of alcoholism, and until we know it, you know, we don't know what to do about it. But I had to take this little boy to all these doctors. Bill was gone a lot. We moved out to Long Island. We lived in Floral Park, and we moved out to Deer Park, which was way, way out on Long Island. And at that time, Bill then he didn't get home too often at all. He would stay out for days, and sometimes weeks. And I'm so emotional today. I'm sorry about that. And I would take this little baby to one doctor, and then I couldn't pay him, so then I'd go to another doctor, so it got a little bit tough. Well, anyway, after we were in that house just a year, Bill decided we should sell that house because I didn't get along with the neighbors. And I believed him. Thank you. And I believed him. You know, we bought this little house out in Deer Park, and you know, it had the most gorgeous backyard with strawberry patches and everything. But the reason we really bought it had a basement with a bar that was unbelievable. And I know that is why we bought that house. We don't have one picture of that yard. Not one picture of that yard. from this house, we asked my mother if we could move into her basement. And that didn't bother me too much because it was my mother's house. You know, it didn't matter. It was her basement, and I had slept there before when there were a lot of us around. You know, we slept down there. It was okay. So that didn't bother me. I know that's what saved me. If I had to go to any other basement, I don't think I ever would have survived. So we moved into my mother's basement, and I had another baby while I was there. I have up to five. I lost Larry. Let's see, Judy, Charlotte, Bill, Larry. I had him out in Deer Park, and then we moved back to New York, back to Richmond Hill. And Bill said that he would take all the money that we got from that house and put it away, and we would save it, and then we would buy another house. I didn't know that until he came into the program that house was taken away from us for non-payment. But see, I believed him. Why would I not believe him? Why would I not believe him? I never knew. I still never knew that he was drinking a whole lot. I had a brother-in-law who was more like a father to me. And he and Bill got on very well together. They drank together and gambled a lot together and played this song by Della Reese, "Don't You Know." You know, to the top of their lungs would sing, "Don't You Know." We just heard that on the car coming out. It was really funny. But we moved into my mother's basement, and it was there that I began to realize that something was really wrong and that maybe it wasn't me. But, you know, I became a recluse. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to see anybody. I would, we didn't have a telephone. We had to use my mother's. She would go away sometimes and say, oh, take the food in the kitchen and in the refrigerator. Just take it and eat it, don't worry. That's because she knew I didn't have any food. When Bill would be gone for 2 weeks, I really didn't know what was going on. But you know what I did? I got ready for him. I got ready. I would clean my house. I would cook. I would get things ready because he was going to come home soon. And I never knew where he was. And I never went out to look for him. But I wouldn't know where to look. So I never went out to look for him. And I'm very grateful that Bill was not a home drinker. I've heard so many horrible stories about how terrible it can be when they drink at home and they abuse people, you know. So I feel fortunate. I think I had to learn, I learned in Al-Anon to be grateful for the things I didn't have to go through. I enjoyed hearing, not enjoyed, but it was good for me to hear people that had it worse than I did, because it would make me more grateful for what I hadn't gone through. Oh, there were different things that happened. You know, we would go to parties, and so I would try to figure ways to keep Bill home now. We would go to parties, and he would run out of cigarettes. We were both very heavy smokers, and he would always run out of cigarettes. So we'd come home, and he'd say he had to go out for cigarettes. He didn't have any cigarettes. So I bought him a carton of cigarettes. So that we'd come home from a party, and I'd say, he'd say, I'm going out for cigarettes. I'd say, oh, I have a carton. And he would get angry at me because I bought him a carton of cigarettes. And then, when he would be gone, I would, we'd peek out the windows, you know, to see if they're on their way home. And I would peek out the window, and he would come in and see me, and he'd say, you don't trust me. So the next time, if I saw him coming, I would be awake. I'd hop into bed, make believe I was asleep. He'd wake me up and tell me I don't care about him. Talk about confusion, you know. One time I thought I was going to get even with him. And he had been gone. He was supposed to be going somewhere. I don't remember where. You know, some of these things are so vague now, so many years ago. And so I said, I'm going to get even with him. And he came home from, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 day drunk. And I said, I took a bottle. I said, see this? If you leave again, I'm going to drink this. Now, I had 5 children at this time, all under 5. Well, maybe they were 5 and under. Maybe my oldest daughter was 5. Well, what's the difference? A couple of months, huh? So he left, and I went on, and I drank this bottle. I don't know how much of it I drank, but I passed out. And he tells me he came home, and I was passed out on the bed. Now, I know it was my high power that took care of those babies. I mean, they could have died. They could have gotten into a lot of trouble. How grateful I am, you know? I came to hate all the children. I really hated having to take care of them because it was so much work all the time, you know? He was off having a good time, and I know he did sometimes have a good time. I know he went through a lot of pain, and but for the grace of God, there go I. I lost it. Oh, taking care of all the kids. Yeah. But I know now why God put these children in my life. I know that. That if he didn't put these children in my life for me to take care of, I probably would have gotten into a lot of trouble. I would have gotten into a lot of trouble. And my mother, she was a very smart lady. She would never babysit unless she knew that I was either going to a church meeting or I was meeting Bill. Yes, she was a very smart lady. Every now and then, Bill would invite me to go into this. He worked in New York City. He would invite me to go into New York with him. Now, mind you, we had no money, you know. I found out later we weren't even paying my mother rent. And no money for food and stuff like that. And I would go in with him, and I would see these $100 bills buying the bar and all this. And I would wonder how. How can he do this? You know, how can he do this? I didn't understand. And more I began to realize, began to feel that it was me. It had to be me. If only I would change. If only I could do something. What would I do? I gained weight with each child that I had. And I don't know that that was any reason. But, you know, we can blame ourselves for a lot of things. And and my hair was too short, my hair was too long, you know, everything. Through a set of circumstances, things got really bad, but through a set of circumstances, I do want to say that during this time, even though I felt like my children were such a burden, I was up every morning with them, I fed them, I took them for walks. I remember walking, there'd be a carriage, then there'd be a seat on the carriage, there'd be one on this side, and one in here, you know. And I was happy as a lark, I really was, you know. My sister-in-law and my brother Anthony's wife had 7 children, and she says, sometimes I wonder where we were coming from. We were so happy when we were having all these babies, when they were little treasures. It's when they grow up to be teenagers. Try having 5 teenagers at one time, you know? I mean, that really blows your mind. I do want to say that during this time, even though I felt like my children were such a burden, I was up every morning with them, I fed them, I took them for walks. I remember walking, there'd be a carriage, then there'd be a seat on the carriage, there'd be one on this side, and one in here, you know. And I was happy as a lark, I really was, you know. My sister-in-law and my brother Anthony's wife had 7 children, and she says, sometimes I wonder where we were coming from. We were so happy when we were having all these babies, when they were little treasures. It's when they grow up to be teenagers. Try having 5 teenagers at one time, you know. I mean, that really blows your mind. You know, I remember, through a set of circumstances, but I had called our family doctor and said that my brother-in-law was having trouble and thought he was going nuts. And could he suggest something? This is a man that delivered 5 of my babies. I love him, Dr. Altruda. And he suggested that my brother-in-law, he knew who I was talking about, because he was Bill's family's doctor too, suggested that Bill see a psychiatrist. And through that, Bill, and that's his story, so he'll tell you how the rest of that went. He got into AA, and he went for a while, and he went out to drink again. I didn't go to Al-Anon, I didn't go to any AA meetings. I didn't know it was for me or that there was anything there for me. I just thought that there was help for Bill and he was looking for some help. But a year later, when he did finally get back into AA, after a few months, actually I think June might be 35 years. This is the month that I think I started going to Al-Anon. He invited me to an open AA meeting, but before that, men would pick him up and take him to meetings, and then they would come back to our house once in a while, and I would make coffee, and they would talk, about the program of AA, and what AA had done for them, and they would talk about the steps, and they would talk about the slogans, and I thought, wow, you know, I mean, I've always grown up going to church and stuff like that, but I never heard anything like this. This was wonderful, you know. This was really wonderful. I couldn't hear enough. I just couldn't hear enough. It was so exciting what they were saying to him, you know. But I figured this was just for him, that there was nothing there for me. This was going to do something for him, and he would learn how to live without drinking. And I really believed that it would happen. I had a lot of faith in what was going on. I had a lot of faith in Bill. You know, I really did. I always knew that there was so much more in him and that something was happening to him, and I didn't know what it was, you know. My hero was going down the tubes and nobody could help us, nobody. But these men, I mean, they really, the look in their eyes, you know, it was like something was on in their eyes, and maybe it would go on in our eyes too, in Bill's eyes. But after a few months, I called his sponsor and said, you know, what do I do? Can I ask him things? Can I talk to him about things? And he said, whenever he's ready, he'll talk to you. Can I get to a meeting? Whenever he's ready, he'll invite you. I said, what do I do about booze? You know, do I keep it in the house, or what do I do? You'll learn that someday. You'll learn about it someday. So anyway, After a few months, Bill invited me to my first open AA meeting. And it was there I was to meet my first Al-Anon sponsor, Hattie. She was a tough Jewish broad, and I loved it to death, loved it to death. And I asked her all these questions eventually. And I remember her telling me, get it out of the house. What do you need it in the house for? But if he wants it there, keep it there. You know, it's really his decision. It has nothing to do with you. You let him make that decision. At this very first Al-Anon meeting that she took me to, I learned that I didn't cause the disease. I learned that I couldn't control it. And I learned that I couldn't cure it. But you know, there was something else I learned. But boy, can I contribute to it with this mouth. This mouth. I don't know that I had as big a mouth before Al-Anon as when I came in, because you see, after I was in Al-Anon a while, I became perfect. And I knew everything, you see. And in Al-Anon, they taught me to have a little bit of balance. But I remember at that first meeting, I cried a lot, and that's all I could do. But you know what I felt? When they call us the Al-Anon family group, I felt I was home. These were my people. They understood what I was talking about. They knew my feelings. They knew it. Everybody that said something I could identify with. Everybody. You know? It didn't matter whether she was older or younger. When I was young, we were only 27. I was only 27 when I came around. I was complaining once, and I said, God sakes, I spent more than half my life in Al-Anon, you know? And I thought, well, what better way to spend your life, really, you know? It was one of my days when I was feeling sorry for myself. We can do that no matter how long you're in Al-Anon. We can get complacent. So Hattie said to me, what you need is Al-Anon, and he has AA for him, and you need Al-Anon. And she began to take me through the slogans. I really couldn't get to the steps real quick, couldn't contain much. I could read a very little bit, and she'd say, if you read a sentence and you don't understand it, give me a call. And she was wonderful. I remember after a while I said to her, he hasn't taken me to a movie for such a long time. And she said, is that right? Isn't that too bad? I want a little bit of sympathy, you know. And she says, just work on yourself and take care of what you've got to take care of, you know. Al-Anon has done so many things for me. You wonder where to begin. It has taught me that I'm a good person. It has taught me that I should take care of myself. And that's hard to do when you've been taught all your life to sacrifice and give and lay down. But in those the do's and don'ts, the last thing they say is don't be a doormat. And that was hard for me to learn, very hard for me to learn. It's still hard for me to learn. After Bill was sober a few months, he was offered a job in Nashville, Tennessee. My friend Chris down here, who came up from Kentucky, we know him from Nashville. I love Chris, his wife Ann, very much. Grateful they're here. And we went to Nashville, Tennessee, and the reason I would go is we went there and found out AA and Al-Anon was really strong there. You know, I love the people. And so we went there, and I grew up in Al-Anon there. We were there about 7 years. My sponsor, Hattie, took me through the first three steps. Well, she tried to get me through the first three steps. Last night was wonderful. I thought that skit was just marvelous. I was wishing it was on tape, really. It was great. And she took me through step one and through step two, and step three was a very difficult one for me to get, very difficult. And I never got to step four until I was in the program 7 years. Why? We moved a lot. We moved to Nashville. And trust. John talked about trust. You know, you got to trust people before you can do your fifth step with somebody. Where can you go? Where else can I go anywhere in the world and talk about these things that I'm talking about and bare my soul to you and know that you're going to understand what I'm talking about? No place but in Al-Anon. So it took me a long time to get to that. But in Nashville, I had all these babies and didn't have a sitter. And this woman, I can't even remember her name, Nelson's wife. Do you remember her name? I don't remember her name. Jane. She started having meetings in her home, and she says, bring your babies with you. Bring your babies with you. And she let me bring all my babies, my five babies with me. It was just wonderful. And it was there I learned more and more about the program of Al-Anon. And the slogans, the steps. I love reading the books. You know, I sometimes think, I love our One Day at a Time, and Courage to Change, but you know, there are a lot of other books in Al-Anon. There's a lot of literature. And I find that a lot of new people don't read all this literature. You know, there are so many books, The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism. There are just so many things to read. And you know, you become stunted if you just read those two little books. There's not enough in them. I also suggest to people I sponsor that they should read the big book of AA. That was an eye-opener to me. And I plan to read it again real soon. I want to go through it again. And Bill talked, he was talking before about silence. And I had to work on that because I became a screamer. Not when the kids were little so much, but when they got bigger. You know, and having these five teenagers, what happened is I went a little nuts at that time. But before that, it was Nashville. I had three babies. We had three rebels. I had three baby boys in Nashville. That was John was the last one we had in New York. Then we had Robert, Walter, and Daniel, and in Nashville, and then we came back. When we came back to New York, we had one little girl, Angela, and she's 26 now, and she's a treasure. She lives in St. Croix. She's a journalist. She's taking after her daddy. She's precious. They're all precious. You know, I remember one Thanksgiving sitting at a table, and they were all grown up now, and thinking, you know, I really am glad. They've been a lot of work. It's been a lot of work having all those children and doing all those things. Man, cooking for 11 people every night. I mean, my God. But I was happy. I had music piped into my kitchen. I always played music. First it was Engelbert Humperdinck, then Eddie Arnold, then Frank Sinatra, you know. And but music. Music to me is what makes it go, you know. I love music. And our youngest boy, Daniel, is in the program right now, and he had a slip a while ago, and thank God he's back. But you know, he called us when he had that slip. At 4:50 in the morning, he called us, and I didn't care. He called because he said, you're not just my parents, you're my friends, and you're in the program, and you understand. So we grew up in Nashville in the program. I loved it. Met a lot of wonderful people. A lot of them are gone now. W.A. Boyd, Cherry Carpenter, all those great people. And all these wonderful women. And there weren't too many men. John was talking about them. There weren't too many men, but I'm grateful for the men. I've learned a lot from the men that have come to Al-Anon and have taught me a great deal. And so we grew up in Nashville, and after a few years in the program in Nashville, and after a few years, I guess 6 or 7 years, Bill took a job in Cleveland, Ohio. I don't know if anybody's from Cleveland, but it was the worst year I ever had. We lived in Shaker Heights. It was very lovely. It was still the worst year I ever had. Happened to be my mother passed away that year. And all my life, I had been away from my mother. And geez, it doesn't get any easier. That was in 1968. And after about a year and a half, we moved back to New York. Now, in Cleveland, I went to a couple of meetings, but I really didn't get involved in Cleveland, in Al-Anon. I went to a couple of meetings, and all I did was knock the alcoholic. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't go to those meetings because they were very negative. And I didn't need any negativity in my life, you know. So I read a lot, called my sponsor in New York, and I called anybody I could who was in the program. And then we got back to New York, and we moved to Rye, New York. And it was a nice little community, but you know, once you get away from going to those meetings, it's difficult to get back to going again, isn't it? It's very difficult. And something began to happen inside of me. I knew that. And but after a year, I just said, I've got to find out where it's going on. And I did. I went to the Mamaroneck group. And I went about three meetings. And let me go back one moment, if you don't mind. When I first started in Al-Anon back in New York, do you know how many meetings I got to? There was one meeting every other week. One meeting every other week. And was I grateful to have that, you know? How lucky we are today. You can go in the morning, you can go noon, you can go night. I mean, it's just marvelous. They have babysitting, they have everything. So they have spots on television, you know? Whoever doesn't go to Al-Anon, my oh my. They just don't want to go, I don't think. So we moved back to New York, and after a year I got involved in the Mamaroneck group of Al-Anon. And after I went about 3 weeks and they realized I was in the program a while, become secretary with the group, you know, sort of take care of things. And I was that for a year because they couldn't go chairman, whatever it is. You know, whoever plans the meetings and gets speakers and stuff, if they call it different things in different places. But I loved it. I really loved it. And it was during that time I was to meet, I did finally go, I have gone through all the steps. You know, I admitted I was powerless, knew I was insane. I was glad to hear I was insane. I was glad to hear I was as sick or sicker than the alcoholic, and that I enabled him to do the things. He did not do them to me. I allowed it to happen, you know. And I had a lot of character defects before I came into the program. I think the disease of alcoholism just brought them out. They were probably all really there, hidden under somewhere, and the disease of alcoholism. I can't be grateful that Bill was an alcoholic. I will never say that. I will never say I'm grateful that he's an alcoholic. But I am grateful for the program of AA and Dr. Bob and Bill W., being divinely inspired to put these steps together for us to live by one day at a time. You know, how lucky we are. How lucky we are. That's why I love that skit last night. It was great. You were great. You were wonderful. you know, I wish I could say that once you get into Al-Anon and your spouse or your significant other is in AA, life just goes on real easy and it's wonderful. Bill and I have almost been divorced I don't know how many times since we've been in the program. You know, I mean, we came, instead of going back, we were in California, we lived there part of the time, we live in New York part of the time, and so what we did is we took a trip up the coast, it was gorgeous up the coast, Carmel and Monterey Peninsula, went to Alcatraz, and where else, Lake Tahoe, lost a lot of money, Reno, had a good time. And but before that, I would say a few days before that, we had a big argument, and I thought, this trip is never going to happen. But they don't last as long now. They really don't. And someday I'm really going to grow up. I wonder what I'm going to be when I grow up. I have to backtrack a little bit more here, too. During this time of... we moved into Rye, and we had a smaller house, and then I got pregnant to Angela, my baby. And I'm the baby of my family, and so they still call me baby, and I said to her, she'll be baby for the rest of my life, you know. And I lost it. Somebody said the other day at a meeting, it was at an AA meeting, my memory's okay, it's my recall, it's bad. so I became very active in Al-Anon, in Mamaroneck, let's do it that way. And it was there, I went on a retreat, and in order to take, I did the fourth step, I had to have somebody I could trust to do the fifth step with, and I found this priest. I didn't do it in the form of a confession, I did it face to face. He understood what I was doing. And I don't know that it's necessary to do it with an Al-Anon person, as long as the person... I was told, as long as the person that you're doing it with understands the Al-Anon program and understands what you're doing. And I trusted this man, and I was able to do the fifth step with him. He also has passed on, And but he's been a great help to my family and myself. He was a great man. I was also fortunate when I went back to New York, Lois Wilson, the co-founder of AA's wife, who co-founded Al-Anon, I had a picnic. There's still a picnic there at Stepping Stones each year. But I was in the program 13 years and went to her picnic up in Bedford Hills, New York. And that was the first time I met Lois. I had seen her before at a meeting. I had spoken at a meeting. She was there. But this is the first time I really met her. And we were to become very good friends. And I was with her the day she died, as a matter of fact. And I always thought she would be such a busy lady, but I found out she spent all her holidays alone. So we started inviting her to our house for holidays. She would stuff our mushrooms and play with our children, and they loved her very dearly. It was wonderful. I thought she would live forever. I thought she would live forever. When she, that day, when I was with her, they had put a tube down her throat, and she really just wanted to go. She wanted to be with Bill. And she kept saying she had no air, and I kept telling her, if you breathe on your own, they'll take it out, and then you'll be with Bill, you know. She was a great lady. But you know what, that first picnic, which was wonderful because she opens her house to you, you can go up to the house, see all, she saved everything. And you can go to her house, and then there's Bill's studio, you know, which you can see, and who's never been there, it really is a thing to do. It's really a wonderful thing to go over there and see it. But, I missed it again. Okay. I love the program of Al-Anon. My two friends are here. I want to thank Maureen for introducing me and spending some time. I want to thank Carl and Clara for being such great hostesses. And I want to thank you all for being here and listening, you know. What would I do without you? I couldn't speak to the chairs, you know. Al-Anon taught me a whole lot. It taught me that I could really do something. One thing I learned from Lois, and she would emphasize this so often, that Al-Anon was not to be a cocoon that we come into and come here and just come to Al-Anon meetings and go to AA meetings and be real safe. It was to learn about and go out and talk about it and be the best Al-Anon you can be, so that if somebody meets you and they know that you're an Al-Anon, they would want to maybe come to Al-Anon and find out what it's all about, you know. During this time, when I say I had all these teenagers, I went through the time that I called my crazies. It happened to be the time I was going through my changes. And so I would scream and yell a lot, and Bill decided I needed some psychiatric help. Wasn't him. Wasn't the kids. It was all me, you see. So I went. I went for a while. And I went, so I don't know how long it was, and we were so much in debt to this guy, you know, and once he couldn't see me in his office, and so I went to, they gave me Valium to go on to at that time, and I don't take medication too well. I was really dopey. And once I went to his house, and I saw he was building a pool and building an extension, and he was doing this. And I thought, wow, you know. And then a couple of weeks later, Bill and I had one of our little spats. More than spats. I mean, war chairs. We didn't have war chairs, but we wore it a lot. And I called him, and I said, I really have to see you. And he said, well, I can see you in 2 weeks. I said, I need to see you now. He said, I'll see you in 2 weeks. And I stopped going to him. And I doubled up on Al-Anon. And I realized this is where the answers were. This is where the help was. I can talk to anybody. But you know, I began to feel, God, you're in the program so long. You know, you shouldn't be having these troubles. I'd hear these people come and say, I got up this morning, I got on my knees, I prayed to God, and my day's perfect. And I thought, gee, that's great. I don't have too many days like that. Maybe I'm not praying enough. Maybe I kneel on stones. I don't know. But maybe she was just talking. I don't really know. I can't take her inventory, but life has never been like that for me. Life has been a struggle. Life has been a struggle. One day at a time. One day at a time. I loved, when I first came in, the slogan I took up was, easy does it. Easy does it. And my sponsor said to me, but you have to do it. You have to change your babies, you got to make the beds, you got to wash the floors, and you got to do all that stuff, you know. What that means is you do the legwork for a problem that's insurmountable. Do the legwork and then turn it over. Turn it over to my higher power, whom I choose to call God. I have found a God in my life. I was never taught that God was punishing. I never thought he was going to send me to hell and anything like that. My mother never taught me God that way, and never did, neither did the nuns. But here, if there's something, being spiritual, I found something in here, you know. I felt it yesterday when I came. As soon as I came here and started after seeing old Miss Flame and all these other people out here. When I finally began to see people from Al-Anon, I got this warm feeling, this warm sense of belonging inside me that I'm home again. My sponsor told me that when I get up and talk at an Al-Anon meeting, whether it be small or large, that I'm to speak for myself, and I'm to speak because it helps me, and to never say no when you're asked to do anything in Al-Anon. Service is such an important thing in Al-Anon. I was a group rep for a while. I was on the archives committee at World Service for a while. I got fired because I missed two meetings. That's okay. But that's okay. I really felt like where I really belonged was at the home group, at the little groups. You know, I loved being at little groups at meetings and speaking at little meetings. You know, Al-Anon taught me that there's a big world out there and that I shouldn't be afraid to experience this big world. We've had a bunch of things happen. You know, we have our two oldest daughters who took a lot of my time in my life, especially when they were teenagers. I didn't mind it when they were babies, but they caused us a lot of problems. They're not talking to us now. It's been four years. Can't see my grandbabies, you know. And ordinarily, when things like that would happen, I'd scream and yell, and I think that's what they wanted me to do, but you know, I didn't do that. I sent them letters, I told them I loved them, you know, and I don't know, I got a birthday card from one of them at my birthday, but you know, and then I got a card on Mother's Day, after Mother's Day, and she thanked me for all the things I taught her, how to cook, how to sing. Not a great singer, but we sang anyway. Had to dance, had to pick out a perfect skirt at a rummage sale. That's what I did. I ran the rummage sale in our church in Rye at Resurrection for 21 years. Now, I had never worked that much. I had only worked at a bank for a little while. So when I ran this rummage sale and we drew in $5,000, I thought, wow, I've made it. This is my I love secondhand stores and rummage sales. They're great things to go to. But anyway, I wanted to get back to my sponsor. She told me that I speak for myself, and if it helps anybody else, that's a fringe benefit. I hope I help somebody today. Thank you.